The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
Now, the beef industry has been in the news a lot of late, with many Irish farmers concerned about Brexit and, of course, the Mercosur deal, which would allow thousands of tons of beef to be imported into Europe from South America if it goes through. Farmers are calling for the deal to be scrapped. We're joined by two butchers who have been collaborating for some time now in the industry. Peter Hannan of Hannan Meats and Pat Whelan of James Whelan Butchers join me now. Peter, you've been involved in the meat industry for a long time. A very varied career, I think it's fair to say, is it?
Yeah, God, yeah, 40 years this year, Richard, and it doesn't seem like that. I feel a lot younger than I look. But no, it's been wonderful. I wouldn't change a day of it.
Where did you start with it?
Oh, I started at home on the farm. That was, I'm originally from Selbridge in County Kildare. And we farmed at home and got the appetite for all things livestock. And onto meat from there, and I came out of Castleknock at 16 years of age, but had a very clear vision of what I wanted to do. It was either veterinary or the meat business, and I had no appetite for spending 7 years in Trinity doing veterinary, so it was the meat trade. So I've been at it from I was a kid, and it's a wonderful business. It's not the simplest thing in life, but I guess certain people are made for it, and we're sort of maybe representative of what's made for it.
And Pat, what about you? It was almost inevitable, was it, growing up on the farm in Tipperary?
Yeah,
you
went into butchering. Inevitable, but at the same time, when you grow up in something that's all around you and it's part of family life, family business is a continuum of one and the other. And that sense of purpose comes very early in life, or that sense of belonging almost. So you're either put standing in a gap, or you're put to work, or to have some meaning in your day. So very much grew up with it and grew into it that way.
Now, the two of you, you know each other a long time. Have you been working together or collaborating for a long time? How did that come about, Peter?
From we met, I'd say. I remember the day very, very, very well. You meet certain people in a lifetime, and where you connect, and you realise that you have a lot in common. You share a passion and one thing and another, and you may not meet a lot of people like that in a lifetime, but in all the time I've known Pat, I've felt very honoured and privileged to know him, and we just we're very like minded. We share a lot of the same passion for what we do. And it's a lovely thing when you do manage that encounter.
Now, Peter, you had developed this quite a bespoke product, this Himalayan salt product. Can you just tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, it's the salt is the sexy bit and it gets the headline, but it really is a process. A lot of people eat a piece of aged meat and to describe it as taste of blue cheese, or it's gamey and one thing. It's a piece of beef. It should be clean. Beef is a very, very subtle thing.
And what's different about it?
We are able to age meat for prolonged periods of time. We do it regularly, weekly, up to 100 days and that sort of thing.
An ordinary salt won't do. It's something about the qualities of this Himalayan salt, or where do you source that from?
We brought ours from Pakistan. Himalayan salt 250 million years ago was the seabed. And modern day salt is coming out of oceans that we have polluted, some to the tune of 20-30% in one thing. And in order to consume that, we have to process it. So the Himalayan salt is the purest salt known to man. It has 82 trace elements and minerals that are in no other salt. So it's a very, very unique, very, very unique thing. And it is the only one that we found that works. It would have been lovely to use Irish Atlantic sea salt or things like that there. Fleur de Sal, something that's maybe more native to us, but it just wasn't able to do what we wanted.
And the first time you used it, you were able to import it, were you? Was it all fairly straightforward, or was that difficult?
Well, bringing it in the first time was far from straightforward. We had to find a little man in Pakistan who owned a salt mine, and that would be a fair challenge any Monday morning you'd get up. But when we did find him, we persuaded them to process it the way we wanted it, and about 2 months later, he rang and said, "We'll be leaving the mine tomorrow morning, and we were due to leave. We got a call the following day to say we didn't get out of the mine. There was 4 foot of snow last night, so we won't be leaving for a month. And when they did get it out, they put it on the wrong boat and they sent it out to Dubai instead of Felixstowe. And then when it arrived in Felixstowe, eventually customs were watching 4.5 ton of product on a container coming from Pakistan. So you know what they thought it was. So they confiscated it for a couple of weeks. And then when we got it out of them, the stevedores wouldn't move it around the port because it was on pallets that were far too heavy. So we had to send our own man over. Nobody wanted to bring it to Northern Ireland either. So we had to send our own man over, put it on our own lorry and bring it home. And one thing
else. This was a logistical nightmare, basically.
It was 2 months' work turned into about 5.5 months' work. But as I say, we're good at perseverance.
And it's been going more smoothly since.
Oh, no, ever since that day, we perfected it. We polished it a bit.
You've got the route from Pakistan all sorted out.
We're almost local over there now.
And Pat, your own business venture then, In relation to meat, I mean, you had obviously moved into a very high-end quality part of the meat business and the relationship with Dunn Stores.
Yeah, absolutely. The business has grown and evolved over the years. But the what we're doing at Peter is similar to what we do with other food producers in Ireland, where we collaborate with people, where we recognise a quality product and then collaborate with people to create an opportunity, both for James Whelan Butchers and for the fellow food producer.
And Peter, your business is essentially based in the north. How did you come to Northern Ireland in the first place? It was quite a while ago, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I'm there a long time. I went up to the north in 1981 or 1982 and bought a meat factory for Seamus Pearson. I was only supposed to be there for 20 minutes and, as I say, I never came home really. Yeah, look, the north of Ireland,
it was a hotbed in the 1980s to
it was a lot different to what it is today. But you know, with that went the opportunity. You know, it was different to down home. But, you know, probably because of that, you know, there was opportunity there, which we identified. And look, wonderful people, wonderful product.
How do you mean because
product.
Of that there was opportunities? Maybe fewer people were willing or able to set up businesses there.
It was tough. I mean, we had vans hijacked. I mean, you know, guns put to the back of drivers' heads, all sorts of things. You know, it was difficult to operate. You know, there were additional things that weren't a feature of a normal day down home. But, you know, because of that, I maintained there was opportunity because everybody didn't want to endure that. And we did. And you know, people in Northern Ireland were very, very good people. And there was wonderful raw material and all the ingredients to bake the cake were there.
And you've been supplying quality meat to a lot of high-end restaurants, Michelin star restaurants in London?
Yeah, we do. We supply maybe 400 odd restaurants throughout Europe. We do a good bit into France, down to London. We supply exclusively into Fortnum and Mason in London, Mark Hicks, Angela Hart, a lot of people and a lot of wonderful chefs in Ireland.
Are they hard to please, Peter?
Do you know, they're only as hard as you make it yourself. You know, it's all about, if you give somebody exactly what they want, there's never an issue. And you know, the difference between good and great in every walk in life is attention to detail. So you know, if you give people exactly what they want, you don't have any problems or difficulties.
Well, it's one thing to say the customer's always right, but if the customer is a Michelin star chef, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, do you know what, quite often you get this persona, and that's quite often not the person that's actually underneath that. You know, we have relationships with a lot of very, very famous chefs and one thing, and you know, to a man, they're wonderful people. You know, they're doing a very, very tough job, and we're in support. As Pat said, we're collaborating with them, we're working together on the team, and you're paddling at their pace. And you know, they raise your game for you. You know, they have very, very high standards, and you're either up with that or you're not.
The meat business has come into focus a lot with Brexit, and it's really talking about, I suppose, to some extent, more mass-produced beef exports, you know, to UK shelves and so forth, coming out of Ireland and the possible implications. But in a general sense, are you worried about it, Pat, for the sector?
Of course, there are all kinds of navigation, or there are all kinds of obstacles on the road, but being able to navigate those with a great product is a way around all of that. I think the future for Irish food is fantastic. I think internationally we have a great reputation. Of course, we need to grow other markets, but I think we have a great relationship with the consumer already in the UK, and I think it will. A lot of things will have to happen before that relationship becomes anything what it is today.
Peter, what about you? You're in an unusual position because a lot of what you're producing is in Northern Ireland and you're supplying it to Britain, so it stays within that market. But then you're also supplying lots of other places that will remain in the EU.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd have to say, Richard, you know, I've said from the start, to watch this space. I put a question mark as to whether there will be a Brexit or not. I mean, we're coming to the 11th hour, but I mean,
the 13th hour even.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were at the 11th hour 11 hours ago, but you know, it's now look, you know, things have a funny way of sorting themselves out. I mean, as an industry, we've been through BSE, foot and mouth, Horsegate, all those things, and one thing. And Monday morning comes, and as I say, reality dawns, and away you go with what you're doing. I don't believe we'll be into tariff territory or anything like that. You know, all of the scaremongering and everything like that, when the dust settles, I mean, I think we'll just get on with business. It might be a slightly different piece of paper that has to travel with it or something like that, but you know, commerciality finds its own level and its own ground, and I do believe if we're here, God spare us all this day next year, we'll be able to talk about this, as I say, it was maybe a bit of a storm in a teacup.
Pat, meat, red meat consumption in particular, has come under pressure vis-a-vis health and diets and so forth. The most recent spotlight is around climate change and sustainability and the question of whether or not we all need to start consuming less red meat. Do you think that that's a really strong argument that's unlikely to go away and could have a long-term impact on the industry?
Well, I passionately believe that the future for the industry is where consumers are going to eat less but eat better. And I think they're active in the market looking for that better product. They're taking a very holistic viewpoint of what their consumption is. You're seeing huge areas of change within different demographics and within in different age sectors in what would have been traditional. So I think there's lots, it's an opportunity to learn because there's lots of change in the market.
I think it will be less effect on this island because the method of how we produce our beef is very, very different. You know, intensity and commerciality in one thing and is probably not what we need to be doing. But what we're doing here, grass-fed systems and things like that, and producing a very, very high-class product, that's where I think it will focus.
Well, Peter Hannan and Pat Whelan, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Pleasure.
Thank you.